One of the challenges of my job is that I'm forced to come down to Miami in December to a resort and spend a couple days. But, you know, as Rabbi Singer said, what I wouldn't do for Klal Yisrael. I hope I'm an inspiration to all of you. I spend my time, much of it, traveling to communities, both in North America and over the past year or two, increasingly outside of North America. In the past couple of months, I was in Johannesburg in South Africa and Moscow and Berlin, including many other places in this country. And for me, it's a tremendous chus to be able to spend time in each of these communities with the creme de la creme, the most wonderful and inspirational people. I come to communities and I'm simply inspired by the people that I meet. I generally am involved with kailalim, either helping build new kailalim or going to kailalim and meeting the Rosh HaKailalim, the Yungalite, and if I'm able to be of assistance in any way, it's always a tremendous chus for me. And sometimes when you have something in your community and you see it day in and day out, you don't always appreciate it like you should. I had some friends who were in Lakewood this past week from Johannesburg, so they were coming for a chasana, and I was there about a month ago, and I said, when you come for the chasana, I'll take you around a little bit. And I got to watch how they viewed going through the Beis Medrash, and the new Beis Yitzchak, the new building they just built, and I was inspired by seeing how they were inspired. I see it often, so I get kind of, I guess, jaundiced. I get used to it. I don't appreciate it as much as I could and I should. So I'm here just for a day, and I get to go. I was here, I think, last a year and a half, 2.5 years ago, or 2 years ago, maybe, I forgot when it was. And I speak to Rabbi Bledger and Rabbi Singer at times throughout the year on the phone. You have an outstanding kailal led by outstanding Rosh HaKailal. And I've seen many, 70, 80, 90, 100, I don't know how many kailalim I've seen. You have a lot to be proud of, and you have there's a tremendous community here, what I've heard. I didn't have a chance to meet many of you, but with outstanding leadership and very special Yungalite, and you should just appreciate that and take advantage of that, as I'm sure you do. When we speak about achrayus for the klal, I guess the first thing that hits me when I saw that title, even though I kind of suggested it, and I kind of think of, like, you know, Moshe Scherer, you know, or Baron Cutler, you know, and it's like, I'm a regular guy. You're, you know, all regular people here. We're not leading Klal Yisrael, doing any great things. And, you know, like, what do you want from my life? I'm trying to, you know, do my job, learn a little bit, take care of my kids and family, and, you know, trying to survive. So what I think we're going to, when we're speaking about this and going through the concept of what achrayus to the klal means, It's not just about, and of course, there's no question, when we speak about a Moshe Scherer or someone like a Baron Cutler that had this broader sense of achrayus, whether on askanus or building Torah, that's achrayus to the klal. But there's, in each of our own lives, in the things which we do, in our daily interactions, there's a perspective that we're speaking about, and I want to share with you, and some of it may be obvious, but I think that this is always important to review, that relates to us in a very, very real way. Everything from caring about a friend who looks a little bit down to putting away a sefer that's on your table that you didn't take out, to sitting and learning night seder in a kailal by yourself if you don't have a chavrusa for an hour and a half. All of those things enter into this lecture, this concept, this idea, this hashkafa of achrayus for the klal. And there's no question that when we think about this concept of achrayus to the klal, there's a what we call the nurture versus nature, the nurture-nature discussion. Certain people, they seem to have it. They're born like that. They're natural doers. They're always trying to do, to build, to accomplish. And some of us are not that type of a person that's always, you know, focused naturally on doing for the klal. But I think there's a perspective of nurture as well. And when we, as parents, as leaders, go ahead and act in a certain way, we model certain behaviors that show that we care, and we take that sense of achrayus and that sense of responsibility, and that has a tremendous impact as well. So it's not just for us, it's for those that are looking and modeling and seeing how we do, the impact that we have upon them as well. As I was thinking about this these ideas of achrayus, in my mind I kept on going back to leadership. I wanted just to share with you just the difference that I was thinking between leadership and achrayus to the klal, because I think they're two very, very different things. I don't want to get into any politics or political people or running for whatever offices people may be running for in this time of the year. But leadership and achrayus for the klal are two very, very different things. A leader can and should, if he's effective, have achrayus for the klal. And the effective and great leaders do. But the fact that someone's a leader means absolutely nothing regarding their achrayus to the klal. They might just like being the boss. And that would be the greatest failure of a leader. But leadership and achrayus for the klal, if one doesn't have achrayus for the klal from a Torah perspective, they're a failed leader. It's not natural that leadership equals achrayus for the klal. Without this hashkafa, without incorporating the principles, the yesaidus of achrayus for the klal, then leadership is nothing more than an egotistical framework for, you know, building self and expanding self. And that's a failure. When we look at the world in which we exist, we see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the Bria, the world in which we live, in a way that we're thoroughly interdependent. I was sitting at supper tonight and I needed a cup of coffee. I had to get up early this morning to catch that plane. I knew I had to speak tonight, I had to be awake, I had to have energy. So I went to the machine there, took a cup of coffee. And I was thinking, how many people did it take to get this coffee into my cup? Ever think about that? How many people does it take to get a cup of coffee into your cup? From the person who tilled the land, cleaned it from the rocks, and planted it, and harvested it, and roasted it, and all the machines that were necessary to allow them to do that, and then the transportation of it, and then the grinding, and each person along the process and the packaging. Thousands and tens of thousands of people are necessary to bring a cup of coffee, because they have big machines that help in the roasting and the harvesting and the grinding. People have to invent those machines and produce those machines and transport those machines and to the cup. And somebody has to make the cup and invent the cup and create the cup and package the cup and sell the cup. We live in a world that we're interdependent. It's impossible. Hashem created the world. You can't live alone. You can't. It's impossible. And Hashem wanted us to be dependent upon each other because He wanted us to give to each other. He wanted us to feel that sense. Rabbi Yisrael said that we're created l'hoil l'achrini, to give to others. That's what we're here for. And like all the great gifts in life that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us, not only did He teach us and tell us what to do, He forced us to live it. We can choose to be blind. We can close our eyes. We don't have to recognize that reality. But if someone opens their eyes for a moment on the chair that they're sitting on or the shirt that they're wearing, they'll recognize what an interdependent world in which we live. And today, as technology moves quicker and faster, and we're more interdependent than ever. If the Chinese devaluate their currency, Americans lose billions of dollars. It's an interconnected world today. We're learning these weeks, since Simchas Torah, the Parshios of Bereishis. Now we know that Torah is teaching us how to live our lives, and there's many halachas and mitzvahs, asay, leis asay, what we can and shouldn't do. And yet the Torah spends an inordinate amount of time sharing with us stories of the avos. And the reason and the understanding is obvious, something we know. That we're not created to be monkeys that are just going through the motions following a certain set of rules. But rather, these mitzvahs are meant to define who we are and how we define ourselves and how we interface with the world around us. And the maisa of us, the stories, the seemingly, on the one hand, simple and on the challenging stories that we see in the of us, are models for us. And how the greatest of the great incorporated everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu meant for us to be into their daily activities and their daily lives. And in a deeper sense, as we know, when we learn the Maisa Avos, when we understand each and every one of the episodes that are depicted so clearly in Bereishis, we're not just learning a story that happened back then. But Maisa Avos Siman Labanim, as is explained, tells us that although we may never, ever come even close to reaching the height of who they were, but within our DNA lives a slight echo of their greatness. And the godless of the Avos lives within us. And we're meant to say, if that's the way they lived, that's part of who I am. That is my DNA. That describes and defines the very essence of what every single Yid is. So it's not just teaching me a lesson on how to live. It's telling me more deeply who I really am. The godless that is mine. And ultimately, what we're here for is to grow, and to grow in godless. And what we're going to see tonight is that one of the most powerful definitions of that godless and that growth is my sense of achrayus to others. Chazal compare Noach and Avram. Let's think about Noach for a minute. Because Noach is a very, very challenging to grasp what Noach was or what Noach represented. Noach lived in a society that was thoroughly corrupt. The Rambam tells us, Derech Priyasa Shaladam, the nature of man, the Yasnimshach Reb the Chaberov, to be pulled after his society. That is, it's human nature. It takes superhuman effort. Total superhuman effort to have the capacity to fight that nature and to stand strong against society. Noach lived in the most corrupt society Kamat that ever lived. Ish tzaddik tamim haya midaraisa. He was perfect. Noach's godless can't be understood. He was perfect in the most corrupt of societies. All around him, the world is crumbling. Morality is crumbling. Interpersonal relationships are crumbling. Every aspect of relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and any message that Hashem wanted to send us was lost. And Noach is standing there as somebody who was simply unaffected and not impacted by anything happening in the world around him. Didn't have a huge kailah, didn't have a huge yeshiva, he didn't have thousands of from Yidden there supporting him. He was one man alone. And yet Chazal tell us that it was called Mei Noach, the waters of Noach. Noach built a teva for 120 years. People said, what are you doing? He said, a mabul's coming. He spent time telling people that the world around them is crumbling and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is upset. Yet, on some level, again, something we'd never ever understand or appreciate, because when we look at their mice and if we'd see them, we wouldn't appreciate their failings and probably not their greatness either. It's so beyond us. But Chazal tell us that in some level, Noach was culpable for what happened. Because he didn't feel the sense of achrayus for what was going on around him. He wrote them off to some degree. He didn't feel, when he saw what was happening, that this is affecting and impacting me, it's my responsibility to bring them back. Let's juxtapose that to Avraham Avinu. And we live today in an era, unfortunately, and it's important to point this out, of when the world around us groups together the word religious fundamentalists together. And everybody's a religious fanatic. Now, whether we like it or not, they look at sometimes, unfortunately, you know, a frum Jew, a Hasidic Yid, just if they look at as crazy as a Muslim fanatic. That's in the secular world, there's a lot of that going on. What does it mean today, a religious fanatic? It means something very simple. The total opposite of what Achrayus represents. If I don't agree with you, you don't exist. Now I don't have responsibility, I will murder you. For absolutely no reason other than the fact that I don't agree with what you're thinking and you don't agree with what I'm thinking. Avraham Avinu was, if we'd have to use the word religious fundamentalist, I think it would probably describe Avraham Avinu. He'd look at the entire world, Avraham Ivri. He stood at one side and he said, everybody in the world is crazy. Everybody's got it wrong. No one's wrong. I figured it out. You live in a society, everybody's mad, except for me. I sat down and there must be a Bara Elim. Everyone's got their gestures, their idols. You're all nuts. You're all crazy. Throw me into the fire, I'll break all the Avodah Zarah. Everybody's nuts. I'm the only person that has it right. Avraham Ivri, he sat and he fought, he changed the world. But he sat and he fought the world. Kadosh Baruch Hu comes to him one day and says, you know what? You know your neighbors down the block? Sodom. The most corrupt society since the moment. They're corrupt in every way. The Gemara tells us, you go through the Gemara one time, I think in Chelek, wherever the Gemara is over there. Disgusting and corrupt. Morally reprehensible. The way they acted. Hashem says, you know, these are the people that stand diametrically opposed to everything you represent and everything I represent. It's time to wipe them out. What's the response? The response we would assume, if Hashem would have come to me, you know, let's get rid of some of these people, no problem. They're a thorn in my side. I'm trying to teach Torah. I'm trying to teach Emes. They stand for everything opposite that. I've been living here for years. They never came to one shear. Get rid of them. Yet Avraham Avinu goes to battle with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In an umba, you look at the psukim there, it's almost chutzpah. He's battling. He says, give me a kailim. Give me 10 Yungalites. I'll put them in Sodom and we'll change the city. That's what he says. I have 50 in 5 cities, now to 10 for one city. Give me 10 Yungalites. I guarantee you, no problems. We'll change the place. Not there. Okay. From Shavu Kaimai. But the sense of achrayus, Avraham Avinu taught us that what that means, achrayus means even to Sodom. I recognize the Tzelem Elokim that exists even there. And that causes me pain. I want to try to help them as well. We had a couple weeks ago, Yaakov Avinu comes to Haran, coming to find a wife. First thing he meets are the shepherds. And this, in the second sentence, Achai, my brothers, he says, Lo yeso asif hamikne. It's not the time to bring in your cattle here. You know, why don't you get back to work? So we can't lift off the stone on the... What's your business? You know, what are you bothering me for? The Torah is full of maisim. There's a sense of achrayus. Achai, he talks to them with respect, with love, with kinship. We find when Yaakov Avinu worked for Lavan, it's almost hard to imagine somebody having that sense of achrayus to a boss. I don't know if any of you work for anybody, but you know I do, and you know I wish I can say, and you know he didn't sleep at night. He was mamish. He was there all the time, every second. Whatever you, and again, I sat and thought for a few minutes. I'm sure if you think of for a little, you look at the Parshias, you'll see this sense everywhere and anywhere. In these Parshias, Reb Chaim Shmulevitz points out a fascinating thing. We know that Yehuda was Zeicha L'Malchus. Yehuda was one of the Shvatim that was Zeicha to, from him should come Malachim, all the kings. And Chaim Shmulevitz explains in an unbelievable shmuz, based on a Tosefta and Brachas, of why was Yehuda Zeicha L'Malchus. And the Tosefta there brings a couple examples, a couple of vignettes, a couple of stories from the life of Yehuda, which teach us what he was Zeicha, why he was Zeicha to Malchus. This is a fascinating thing. The brothers decide to sell Yosef. Now, when the brothers decided to sell Yosef, that wasn't a simple decision. It was a bezdin. And it wasn't a simple bezdin. It was the shiftei kah. So we're talking about probably, I don't know, the greatest bezdin that ever existed, from the greatest but the dinim that were ever in existence, that understood very clearly what they were doing. And they paskin lahalacha, that Yosef was a raidif, and Yosef was chayiv misa. That was their decision. Comes along Yehuda, and he says, Ma betza kinara gesachinu v'chisinu es damai. What do we gain? There's no profit. No financial profit. What do we gain by killing him and covering his blood? Let's sell it. I understand. We've all heard about Bezdin, and we know that Bezdin paskins, and we know Psak Bezdin's halacha. So it's not about making $50. I mean, there's a Psak of Bezdin. It's a Bezdin paskin. It was a real Psak. So what's Yehuda's timing? I'm not going to gain anything. You don't gain anything when you kill anybody. But he's a chayav misa. He's a writer. So it's not about gaining anything. Chisinu is dama. Okay, that's what you got to do. Zachter B'chaim Shmuel Levitz, a phenomenal concept. He says, Yehuda was telling them, yes, we hold these chayav misa, but we're kind of stuck here. We can't really tell anybody what we're doing because we're not going to be able to explain it. So what are we going to do? We're going to be chisinu es domo. We're going to cover his blood. You know what that means? We're not willing to stand up and take responsibility for what we're doing. We're not taking any personal responsibility. You don't take personal responsibility, your din is out. There's no more din. Yehuda was saying, if we're not willing to stand up and say, my action, it's mine, puzzle. The din is puzzle. The chun kreil mishmeilim. And he continues in one of the most challenging and difficult episodes to understand in Bereishis, the story of Yehuda and Tamar. Yehuda, the gadol, the dayan, the paisik, has to admit that he was with Tamar. I mean, every time I think about that parsha, it's mind-boggling. The gadol hadayan had to admit it was his daughter-in-law. The children came from me. If you stop for a second to think about what that took to say that in public, when the Hotziyo B'Tisar is about to be burned, the Gadol gets up and says, I didn't realize. What do you think happened? What is everybody talking about? Zoktis Tosefta, that's Kabbalah Sachrayis. I'm responsible for my actions. Come what may, I did it. You want Malchus, you want Godless, take personal responsibility. And in this week's Parsha, Yehuda challenges Yosef very strongly. Let Binyamin go. Take me instead. Take me instead. He didn't know it was Yosef. He was going to be stuck in Mitzrayim for the rest of his life as an Eved. Done. Life is over. We know Yosef made it out, but 99.99999% of all other Avadim, they didn't make it out. He didn't think he was going to make it out. His sense of achrayus said to him, I'm giving it all up. Says to the Zefta, you want to be a melech? You have to understand what achrayus is really all about. Yehuda understood what achrayus is all about. Excuses don't allow us to take personal responsibility. My father-in-law is Rav Avi Shulman, and he's been speaking lately about this concept. He shared with me numerous times about the concept of what bothers him about excuses. So someone comes to a meeting, and he was late, and he says, sorry, it was traffic. I can't do anything. There's traffic. What am I supposed to do? Why didn't you leave your house 10 minutes earlier? You know, when he comes from Brooklyn to Muncie, there's going to be some traffic. So give yourself an extra 15 minutes. No, there was traffic. I'm not responsible. The moment you're not responsible, there's nothing that can change. I can't tell you to leave 15 minutes earlier because the all-knowing, the all-encompassing problem of traffic stopped me. It's not my fault. Every excuse says, it's not my fault. It was this, it was that, it was the other thing. Achrayus means recognizing I take full responsibility for my actions on a personal level. Chaim Shmuel Levitz also points out that when Yosef was being seduced by Eshes Potiphar. His response wasn't religious in nature. He didn't give her a frum cheshbon. He said, your husband has put me in charge of everything. So I'm an achrayus to him. How can I do this? And that which he concluded, v'chatasi le'elokim, that's going back and explaining why I shouldn't be doing this. Not only on the act itself, but my sense of achrayus, since he's done so much for me, I can't go ahead and go against that. I want to share with you an idea and a concept from the Hakdama, from the introduction to Shari Yosha from Rav Shimon Shkop. I'm sure some of you have seen it. And even if you have seen it, look at it again. Because every time I look at it, I seem to get inspired by it, and I'm just blown away by what he's sharing and what he's teaching us. And if you haven't seen it, it's definitely worthwhile to go through the first page and a half of his introduction. And he shares just what I believe to be a brilliant, brilliant insight into this concept of how we perceive ourselves and our achrayus to the klal. And I want to share with you a piece of what he says, because I think it speaks directly to what we're speaking about tonight. And he explains that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created within us a reality called self-love. We love ourselves. And he proves it with an outstanding proof. He says as follows. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu create this world? So Mesil Shasham tells us, Hashem created this world to be good to us. That's a very, very well-known concept. He wanted to give us schar, give us reward. Okay? So why do we have to go through this world to get the reward? Just don't make me suffer through these years and give me a reward without it. Teretz is because if we wouldn't go through it, we wouldn't earn it. I want to earn it. And if I didn't earn it, then I will not appreciate it. That's so fundamental, this concept of self-love and I, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the only way he can give us something is if we have this sense of I. So if we're talking about achrayus to the klal, worrying about you, how do those two concepts work together? That I is so fundamental, it's simply not breakable. You can't break self-love. It's impossible. Your sense of self defines who you are, and that's unchangeable. If it would be changeable, and if it wouldn't be necessary, then we wouldn't have it. We wouldn't have to create this whole world. I love myself. I love what I do. That's a given. As with everything else and every other concept in Torah, tzaddikim yelchu bo, poshim yikashlu bo. The people that understand this concept correctly and effectively will grow to become the greatest gedolim. And the people that don't appreciate this concept will fail to the depth of the most miserable failure. Because, says Reb Shimon, this concept of I is the most destructive force known to mankind. Why is it, he says, that when someone becomes wealthy, they'll ignore HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Because if I recognize Hashem's role in my success, then all of a sudden, I don't feel as successful. And I need to feel successful. So that feeling that I need to feel successful has just destroyed me. And when a person accomplishes Chachma, which is the greatest gift, and if they don't recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu in that Chachma, why won't they recognize Hashem? What does it cost to recognize Hashem in giving me that Chachma? You know what it costs? It costs and I didn't do it. That's what it costs. If Hashem is helping me achieve that wisdom, then I'm not so great. And if Hashem is helping me reach that financial success, so again, I'm not so great. So this I has been the downfall, and is the downfall of so many people. And yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us in a way where we can't seem to get around it. It's integral to who we are. It's integral to our schar. If you want to appreciate schar nolam haba, you have to have this eye. And yet this eye is the most destructive thing. And if I'm meant to love I, so how does Achrayus to you fit in? I'm about me, not about you. Reb Shimon teaches us an eye-opening concept. And he bases this on the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. He says as follows. Yes, self-love is axiomatic. It's fundamental. You can't get around it. But please, says Reb Shimon, define self. So if you ask my two-year-old, self revolves around all of her older siblings getting her whatever she needs. It's all of our jobs to give her need whenever she wants it. If it's 2 a.m., she will cry until mommy comes to take care of her. If it's 4 in the afternoon, she'll fetch until her older sister or brother gives her the candy she wants. The entire sense of self revolves around what I need now. There is absolutely no concept that Tati went to bed at 3 o'clock in the morning and is exhausted. My two-year-old could not care less. It never ever entered her mind that I may be tired. No such thing. But my 6-year-old or 7-year-old I can speak to, and she knows that I exist. And as they get older, they know that not only do I need food to be happy, but I know that when I learn something and I learn a concept, it also makes me happy. I begin to expand that sense of self and I. It's not just the food, but it might be intellectual pursuit. And as they grow, they understand the ruchnius take a component. I'm not just a body, I'm in a guf and a neshama. I'm both. And when I say I don't mean just the state. I mean the ruchnius. And as a person grows, the ruchnius may even become, hopefully will become even a more stronger definition of that I. And that definition of I expands in healthy relationships between a husband and a wife. When my wife buys clothes, like this, she didn't spend my money. We'll say that, but she didn't spend my money. Yeah, this is it's us. As Arya Levine famously said, our foot hurts. That's what we're striving for. And when our children go ahead and they have certain needs and we give them certain things, that's an extension of our I and a healthy relationship. So what Reb Shimon is telling us is that no, you cannot get rid of self-love. But you can expand it. And a person can come to, and we know this, we experience this with those that we love, their success can become more important than our own success. I want you to be successful even in my detriment. It's okay. I'm happier that you're successful than me. Godless. You want to know what greatness is? You want to know what a gadol is? You want to know what a great person is from a Torah perspective? Their sense of I is expansive. It includes their community. It includes the entirety of Klal Yisrael. By the greatest of Gedolim, it includes the entire Bria, the entirety of creation. And we sat talking in the beginning. Someone's learning a piece of Gemara Night Seder. When a person learns Torah, they're giving Kayach to the entire Bria. Chaim V'Lajin tells us, when you learn a piece of Gemara, when you learn a Shtikl Chumash, when you learn a Svar, when you learn a Rashi, when you're learning Torah, you're giving Kayach, you're giving strength to the entirety of the Bria. If a person recognizes that, my sense of I is expansive and includes all the cosmos and all the greatness that exists in this world that Hashem created, and I am in a sense allowing Hashem to give chiyus and kayach to the Bria by learning a piece of Gemara in Kailul, where the man is giving life to the entirety of the universe. And that's an expansive sense of I. And Matisyo Solomon once said in the Shmuz, if one doesn't appreciate this concept, it's not a good thing. Because a person can sit and learn it, maybe it's all about themselves. A person has to recognize and appreciate, when I'm learning, I'm giving life to the Bria. It's not just what I do. It's not just what I go and do for somebody else. Even my own Limud HaTorah is like that. If we want to grow as people, the definition of that growth is how we define that I. In Ein Ani Li Mi Li, if I don't worry for myself, no one's going to worry for me. But Kishani La Atzmi, if the sole definition of I is me, Ma'ani, you're nothing. You're worthless. If that's all your definition of I is what's good for me, then you failed in that test of life. And you fail in that sense of greatness. Says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, the measure of a person is the sense of his achrayas to the klal. You want to know how great someone is? That's dependent upon his achrayas to the klal. And I want to share with you a fascinating concept, fascinating thought. I had this thought myself, and I shared it with someone who I respected, and he told me he didn't agree. And then I saw it a month ago in Ohio Shlevitz, and I was so excited. Because I thought it was such a good idea. I didn't want to share with anybody because I wasn't sure if it was right. The Megillah, Esther tells us as follows. We all know the story. Esther is taken to the King Ahasuerus. If you look at Esther, she is a very, very passive person. She does whatever Mordechai says. She doesn't say where she's from. Esther is somebody who listens to the Das Torah of Mordechai all the way through. Mordechai is the Rosh Hashiva. Mordechai is the Gadol Adar. Mordechai is the Paisik. And Esther is listening, doing what is said. Mordechai comes and says, Esther, it's time to go to the Melech. She's like, I'm not going. It's dangerous. Mordechai says, this is what you're there for. She agrees. All of a sudden, Esther turns around and says, I'm going to the Melech. And by the way, I want Klai Yisrael to fast. By the way, it happens to be Pesach, where there's a mitzvah say to eat matzah. But I want everyone to fast. Says the Pasuk, Mordechai did, Kechol Asher Tzivsa Lav Esther. All of a sudden, who's the Gadol Adar? Who's the Pesach? Esther's the Gadol Adar. Esther is commanding, telling Mordechai what to do. It's an unbelievable thing. What happened? What changed? And if it was right to fast, then Mordechai is the Pesach, says Reb Chaim. Once Esther said, Kasher avadati avadati, once Esther said, I am avato myself, I'm willing to destroy everything I represent, I'm willing to give up everything that I am, I'm done for the sake of Klal Yisrael. She became bigger. Nis'alav v'nis'gadla yoyser mikol ha'chom shebedayra. She became the Gadol Hadar. She became the Paisik. Tatilbash Esther Malchus. Esther put on Malchus, now she has the Ruach HaKadosh. L'chein tzivso hi al adover. Now she's the Paisik. She's the one who defines what has to get done. Kabbalah Sachrayas, our sense of Achrayas to others, is what changes communities, is what makes all the difference. The person that says we need to do this, we need to have this done, to have that done, thinks about the needs of others. But on the greatest of levels, as we've seen today, the godless, the greatness that it gives a person. Anybody who's here tonight, it's a lot probably more relaxing, interesting things that have come to us, listen to them and speak for 45 minutes on a Thursday night, and it's late and you've worked hard and you're tired. Whoever is here tonight has made a strong statement to their commitment to Limud HaTorah, to steiging and growing as much as they can in Torah. And I hope that some of the concepts, some of the thoughts, and some of the ideas that we share tonight will be inspirational. And as we continue to learn, we'll recognize that when we're learning, the impact that's happening on the entirety of the Bria. And as we open our eyes and we walk around and we interact and interface with others, hopefully we'll have a smaller sense, at least on a smaller sense of our achrayas and our responsibility. And we'll recognize that our success and their success are intertwined. And that our greatness is dependent upon how we see ourselves and how we see our achrayas towards them. A wonderful night.